Hi, everyone. Welcome to Every Great Adventure Begins as a Dream, where I inspire you, my fellow baby boomers, to get out there and see the world. I'm your host, Donna, and although I've traveled a lot, there's still a lot of world out there for me to see. Since I'm not getting any younger, I've got to keep going to see as much as I can before I can't. So let's dream together and plan your next great adventure. After 3 very busy days in Moscow, we boarded a train for magnificent St. Petersburg in the late afternoon. We were in business class, and boxed lunches were included with our passage. About 400 miles and 4.5 hours later, we arrived at our destination. With numerous canals and tributaries running through the city, it's known as the Venice of the North. But to me, Venice, Italy does not hold a candle to St. Petersburg, one of the most architecturally stunning cities I have ever been to. In comparison to other great European cities, St. Petersburg has a relatively short but turbulent history. It was Peter the Great who founded the city in 1703 and decided to make it the capital of the Russian Empire. He had grandiose plans for the city. It took quite some time and several rulers to bring those plans to fruition. But eventually, Peter's dream to build a city that rivaled any of the grand European cities became a reality. St. Petersburg remained the capital of the Russian Empire until the Russian Revolution of 1917, when Moscow once again took the title. St. Petersburg was decimated by the exodus and lost nearly 2/3 of its population during the revolution. At the start of World War I, the city was renamed Petrograd so as not to sound so German. And then in 1924, the city was renamed Leningrad in honor of the man who led the Russian Revolution. This is what I remember it being called as I grew up. St. Petersburg is a city of determination. Nothing is more demonstrative of the will of the people of St. Petersburg to survive than the siege of Leningrad during World War II. Beginning in 1941, the Germans and their allies blockaded the city. Hitler predicted the city would fall within a few short weeks. In fact, it's said that Hitler had invitations printed up for his victory celebration at the Astoria Hotel. Hitler was not prepared for the dogged determination of the people of St. Petersburg. The siege continued for 872 days. By September of 1941, Hitler had changed his goal from occupying the city to completely destroying and flattening Leningrad. Despite being deprived of food, water, fuel, and supplies, the people of St. Petersburg continued to fight. Death and destruction became the norm. By the time the siege was over, Leningrad had suffered the largest loss of life and destruction ever inflicted on a modern city. Even after its most devastating period of turmoil, the people of St. Petersburg rebounded. By 1950, Leningrad had been restored. But once Stalin took over control of the Soviet Union, Leningrad was the site of more oppression, removing over 2,000 city officials, of which numerous were executed after being found guilty on trumped-up charges. The city foundered under the Soviet regime, but since the collapse of the Soviet Union in 1991, Russia's second-largest city has undergone a revival and is now St. Petersburg once again, a vibrant, beautiful place to live and visit. Our accommodations were at the Astoria Hotel, one of the most historic hotels in St. Petersburg. The hotel was tastefully decorated. The decor was light and airy, with the same feel as the entire city of St. Petersburg. The winter room, the hotel's grand ballroom, is beautiful. We were assigned a classic room with a view of St. Isaac's Cathedral. On our way up to our rooms, we noticed a plaque near the elevator listing the names of a few of the many famous people who have stayed in the hotel. Surprisingly enough, it made us feel sort of special to know that we were staying at the same hotel. Our first morning started off with a half-day city tour. Our first stop was to admire the exterior of the Smolny Cathedral. Although originally built as a cathedral in 1748, it's now a concert hall. Next up, a visit to the Fortress of Peter and Paul, where the city of St. Petersburg was originally established. Although there was construction going on while we were there, we were able to go inside the resplendent cathedral where many Russian czars are buried, including Nicholas II and his family, who were murdered during the Russian Revolution. Then it was on to the Church of the Resurrection, also known as the Church of Our Savior on the Spilt Blood, another Byzantine-styled building topped with colorful onion domes. This church was built by the royal family in honor of Tsar Alexander II. It is constructed on the spot where a bomb was thrown at his carriage on March 1, 1881, and he was mortally wounded. His son, Alexander III, declared that a church in his memory would be built on the site. After the Revolution, the Church of the Resurrection was looted and stripped of nearly all its decoration and finally closed in 1932. Having survived World War II and the Siege of Leningrad, the church sat nearly empty, used as a storage facility for many years. In 1970, St. Isaac's Cathedral Museum took over the church and began its restoration. The fully restored Church of the Resurrection finally reopened in 1997. The church currently houses the largest collection of mosaics in Russia. Finally, we toured St. Isaac's Cathedral Museum. This was the main church in the city when it opened in 1858. Although not as ornately over the top as the Church of the Resurrection, with paintings, sculptures, mosaics, and colored stonework, it was still breathtaking. The following morning, our tour started at the famous Hermitage Museum, home to many renowned treasures by Leonardo da Vinci, Raphael, Rembrandt, Matisse, and numerous other artists. The Hermitage Museum is actually comprised of 7 buildings, including the former Winter Palace of the Russian Tsars. For me, it was the Winter Palace that was the star of the show. With its friezes, ornate pediments, incredible chandeliers, mosaics, wood inlay, marble, and gold gilt, the palace itself is a work of art. I've included a link in the show notes that allows you to see the Winter Palace. Their professional photos are way better than any I took. It was Catherine the Great who began this astounding art collection. She had a building constructed, called the Small Hermitage, where she would host her small parties, or hermitages. It was here she kept her collection of artworks, the beginning of the collection that we now know as the Hermitage Museum. The daylight hours were quite short while we were in St. Petersburg, with sunrise at 9:33 a.m. and sunset at 4:48 p.m. I didn't realize how close to the Arctic Circle the city is located. It's about the same latitude as Anchorage, Alaska. As a result, the city experiences short days in the winter and long days in the summer. In fact, from about the beginning of June to mid-July, the sky never gets completely dark, and the locals take advantage of all that sunlight. Our guide explained to us that every year from the end of May to mid-July, St. Petersburg hosts the White Nights celebration. During this time, there are many concerts, theatrical performances, and activities that go on pretty much round the clock. From concerts to ballet or running a marathon, if your visit happens to coincide with the White Nights, I know you'll find it entertaining. Our last tour on our visit to St. Petersburg included a drive out to St. Catherine's Palace. This took us outside of the city and allowed us a glimpse of how the average person lives in Russia. No fancy cars or high-end stores here. On our way to the palace, we stopped in Pushkin and had lunch at the Podvory restaurant. Our meal included traditional Russian dishes such as borscht, mushrooms, beef, stuffed cabbage rolls, and pancakes with honey. The restaurant was housed in a traditional Russian building, which was quite a change from the architecture of St. Petersburg. The waitstaff was dressed in national costumes in the efforts of providing the experience of an old Russian inn. Truthfully, I don't recall much about the taste of the food, but what I do remember is that the vodka that accompanied the meal was way too strong for this lightweight drinker. The sun was beginning to set as we arrived at the palace, named in honor of Catherine I. Peter the Great bestowed the property to his wife Catherine as a gift. However, the property at that time consisted of only a modest 2-story building. It was their daughter, Empress Elizabeth, who chose the site as her summer residence, commissioning a building to rival that of Versailles. And like the Winter Palace, Catherine's Palace is absolutely stunning. Again, the architecture and decoration are amazing. The tour of the palace includes the Grand Throne Room, the Hall of Light, which stretches the full width of the palace, as well as several dining rooms and the Empress's bedroom, all decorated in Baroque, Classical, and Rococo style. However, it's the infamous Amber Room for which the palace is most well known. The original amber of the room was taken by the Germans when they seized the palace in World War II. Although the room has been restored to its original glory, the fate of the original Amber is unknown to this day. It's said that in the summer, the lines for tours of the palace can be quite long. I will say that when we were there in January, there was no line at all. Our trip to magnificent St. Petersburg was short and packed with lots of sightseeing. There's so much history of which I was barely aware. Quite frankly, due to the Cold War, I think we may not have been taught a lot of the history, and what we did get may have been a bit one-sided. Just saying. I know it's Dr. Zhivago that comes to mind when we baby boomers think of the Russian Revolution, and of course, its visions of oppression and communal living when we think of the Soviet Union in general. But St. Petersburg is beautiful and so interesting. Be it on a cruise or a separate land tour, it will be well worth your effort to visit this splendid city. I hope you enjoyed the show today. If you did, be sure to share it with a friend. And don't forget to subscribe to this podcast so you won't miss an episode. For more inspiration, visit my website, everygreatadventure.com, where you can also read my blog and see my travel photos. You'll find me on Facebook, Instagram, and Pinterest as Every Great Adventure. Of course, you can always reach me by email. My address is donna@everygreatadventure.com. Until next time, keep dreaming of your next great adventure.